Welcome to the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast, where we go inside what makes a coach a coach.
Learn everything you can of what the makeup of a program is from a standpoint of recruiting, scouting, fundraising, film, because then you'll always be an asset at any level.
The Guardians of the Game podcast is a production of the National Association of Basketball Coaches and IMG and is brought to you by Wilson Sporting Goods. And now your host, Coach Dave Odom.
Welcome back to the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast. Today's guest is the young head coach and highly successful head coach of the Iowa State Cyclones, Steve Prohm. Steve, welcome to the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast.
Thanks, Coach. I appreciate you you guys having me on today.
Well, we want to. We like to have successful coaches on the podcast, and you certainly qualify there. You've done a marvelous job in a short period of time out there at Iowa State, and you've taken a different kind of track than a lot of coaches. And I know everybody, particularly our young coaches, are going to want to listen to that and kind of learn a lesson from that. Because I get calls all the time about, you know, how can I get ahead in coaches? You've taken an unusual trail, and I want to talk about it. Let's go back and just kind of look at your early childhood, and you got started. You were born up in Vienna, Virginia, moved to Dalton, Georgia, went to Oglethorpe for a cup of coffee, it looked like. Didn't stay there that long. Knew that playing basketball was not necessarily going to be your forte, and decided to transfer to Alabama, where you really got your first taste of coaching as a student manager in 1998, and then later as an assistant to the head coach. Now, I'm assuming at that time Dave Hobbs was the head coach at Alabama?
Yeah, he was the head coach, and actually when I was at Oglethorpe, and you're right, it was a quick cup. I drank about maybe just a sip of the coffee, and I got out of there. I hit six threes in an exhibition game against Palm Beach Atlantic. That was my claim to fame there. And, but then I stayed the year. But Coach Hobbs was the head coach. And actually, when I was writing letters to try to, you know, see if I could get on as a manager there, I was actually writing to your son because Lane was – an assistant there, but Lane was one of his roles there as the assistant was he was kind of in charge of the GAs and flash managers and kind of going through the hiring process. And so I was fortunate to get on there.
Now tell me about that a little bit. Now, what were some of your duties? And, you know, did you sweep the floor? I mean, I know they got plenty of help there at Alabama, no question about that. But I mean, your role to begin with was somewhat menial, I would think, wouldn't it? I mean, you had to kind of start at the bottom and work your way up incrementally.
Yeah, you know, it was a great experience for me. The biggest thing is, you know, like you said, I love basketball, I love to play, but I had got to a point where it's the size, all right. Do I want to play Division III basketball, or do I want to get around a high major program to try to see if I could get into coaching? I actually wanted to go into communications. That was one of the draws to Alabama, is really, really good communication school. And so, you know, as I got in there, I was like, well, maybe I'll coach. And then if I'm fortunate to have a good career coaching, then I can kind of finish up with the broadcasting. And so, but man, you know, you have at Alabama, you know, it's just like here at Iowa State, man, we've got 12, 14 managers. You know, when I was there, I bet Coach Hobbs, I joke with him. He probably didn't know my name to my senior year. But, you know, it was a great experience. The best thing about it, you know, for me was just to watch kind of what all goes on at that level, the daily interaction of what makes a great staff, the daily interaction of what makes, you know, coach-player relationships successful. And then how much you have to work to play at that level and be successful. And so my favorite thing that I really enjoyed doing as a manager there was to get with those guys after practice or on off days or in the evenings and really take them to the gym and get a chance to work them out and rebound. That's probably what I spent the most of my time doing. I really enjoyed that part of it. But, you know, if you had one airport run, you had 100 airport runs, whether it's picking up coaches from recruiting trips or picking up recruits, stuffing a lot of mail outs, licking a lot of stamps and getting those out, and then obviously the laundry. But all of that stuff, I think what's been fortunate for me coming up the way I came up in this business is I learned every phase of the program from a standpoint of, fundraising, recruiting, how to run camps, just so many different things, scouting, to where, when you start at a level like Centenary or a manager, man, you've got to know all the intricacies of the program because there's so much that goes into it. And so I think the route that I went has been really, really helpful for me.
Well, now I got one more question about Alabama, then I want to move forward. Alabama's unique. I mean, it's a football power. We just saw in the last week or so they played in their umpteenth final game, not quite as successful as they normally are, but nonetheless, just a great, great program. I knew Wimp Sanderson, who was the head basketball coach at Alabama before Dave Hobbs. I knew C.M. Newton, who was the head coach at Alabama before Wimp Sanderson, and they all handled the fact that football was king at Alabama. Is that something that you ever you observed, you thought about, or you just lived with it, and you just said, that's just the way it is. We got to be the best we can be on our own?
Yeah, the one thing I think you realize down there, and this is just from my take, is just your fan base is only going to be what it is until kind of football ends. And then as you move into SEC play, I remember we beat number one Arkansas back in 90, I guess it would have been 1994, the year they won the national championship. We beat Arkansas at home, 66-64, and tremendous game, and Coleman Coliseum was electric and sold out. And, back then, my first couple of years at Alabama, we were really good. I mean, we had Roy Rogers, we had Antonio McDice, who was the second pick in the draft, Jason Caffey, who was a top 20 pick, Eric Washington, who was a second round pick. And so, the SEC back then, similar to where it is now, was just loaded with talent. So once you got in SEC play, I think, the fan base really came out and really supported it, once football season was over. But, I think the one thing you look at, and I think it's kind of like here, like a place at Iowa State, is our football coach here has done an amazing job, and our fan base, they really support everything. And that's why it's, fortunate to be here. But, Wimp is a legend, and I got to know his son Barry well, and he had an unbelievable run there. If you look at the success from Sweet 16s to SEC tournament champions, he did an amazing job there, and I think Avery's doing a really, really good job there now as well.
I would think that part of the being successful at a place like Alabama is learning to not only live with football, but let football work for you. In other words, you put it really well, that your fan base actually changes once football season is over. I mean, the crowds begin to fill up Coleman Coliseum, and just being able to use that and live with that and work that and have it to work for you is probably the key. I think a guy like Rick Barnes right now is doing a great job of that at Tennessee.
Yeah, and I think that's what you have to embrace, and it's for my situation here, taking over for a guy like Fred Hoiberg, who's the mayor and had such great success. I think you have to embrace that. You have to embrace, all right, how can Fred continue to help this program? How can he help our brand? And, I can only imagine if you're bringing recruits in and you're saying, hey, Coach Saban, you got 10 minutes, 15 minutes to sit down here and sell how special this university is, the kind of impact that he can. And, we kind of done that here, to where, football recruits will pop over here, basketball recruits will pop over to football. I think you can have it hand in hand. I mean, you look at University of Florida back with Urban and Billy Donovan and the job that they did when they were, winning national championships. And so I think when you have and Alabama football is really a machine now. I mean, just what Coach Saban's done there with six national championships and, several runner-up finishes is you got to let them help you recruit and continue to get your brand out there.
All right, so let's move forward here. Your next stop, Centenary College in Louisiana in 1998, and all of a sudden here comes Billy Kennedy, who you spent a lot of time with early on, and I'm sure you're still, you know, great friends and appreciative of the thing that he gave you. The tale, be it true or not, I don't know, but everybody says Steve Prohm lived in a basement dorm the first year that he was at Centenary. He ate cafeteria food and just tried to learn as much as he could in a short period of time.
Yeah, no question. You know, I was at the University of Alabama, and I graduated in December of 97. I got my degree. I finished student teaching that fall and then stayed around that spring. And Coach Hobbs, resigned that spring, and then they hired Mark Godfrey. And so, you know, I'm 21 years old, just graduated, trying to think how in the world I'm going to get into coaching. We've got all this stuff going on. And so I ended up staying around to see, you know, hey, can I work with Coach Godfrey? Is there any way I can stay around here and maybe be a GA? And so I stayed around throughout that summer and worked. And then one of the former assistants, Thad Fitzpatrick, that worked at Alabama for a couple of years when I was there, was really tied into Billy Kennedy, and they had worked together at Wyoming with Benny Dees. And he said, hey, I think I can get you this, you know, third spot at Centenary. Now, you know, it's no money. It's actually, I think they actually told me it was $10,000 to start, but by the time I took the job, it was no money. And then, meal ticket, and then a basement of the dorm right across the street from the Gold Dome is where we played. And so, you know, I kind of battled back and forth, and actually went to Coach Godfrey and I said, hey, Coach, well, what do you think is better? I've got a chance to go do this, third assistant spot at Centenary, or, you know, maybe I could stay here and still be a GA for you. And he said, he really gave me some good advice there. He said, man, I think getting on the floor and coaching, and then obviously getting a chance to be around a guy like Billy Kennedy with the reputation he had and the character that he had would be great for you. He gave me two bits of advice that I really have kept true to, and I think is really, really good. He said, number one, you know, when you start coaching, make yourself invaluable to the person you work for. Mm. And so I took that to heart really when I went down to work for Coach Kennedy. And then number two, he told me is learn, and it's kind of what I touched on earlier, that the path is learn everything you can of what the makeup of a program is from a standpoint of recruiting, scouting, fundraising, film, because then you'll always be an asset at any level. And so I went down. I didn't know what to expect. You're coming from Alabama. We're eating at Ruth's Chris. We're traveling on charter jets. We're staying at Marriott. And I show up in Centenary College, one of the smallest Division I school in the country. And, you know, my dad dropped me off. He helped me get down there. And we took a U-Haul of stuff down from Tuscaloosa. And we walked down to the basement of the dorm. And, man, that was a rough spot. And so it was the basement to where I don't even know if it had one of those like windows you kind of have, you know, that you can kind of peer out of a little bit, kind of got the windowsill out there. And so every now and then the rain would leak down the side of your room when it rained too much. And so I had to go get my biggest purchase that I bought there was a dehumidifier. It was a dehumidifier in my room to get all the moisture out of there. But, you know, that was an unbelievable experience for me from a standpoint of you got thrown right in the fire to where, man, I'm scouting. I mean, I remember my first scout was Campbell University. We played Campbell at home. That was back when Centenary was in the TAC, which is now the Atlantic Sun. And so, that was my first ever scout. And, and Coach has been so good to me over the years. I wouldn't be where I am without Coach Kennedy. And I think that's the one. You hear so many different stories about college basketball, but I think one of the coolest things is, you know, the mentorship that he was for me and that he provided for me over the years. That, you know, he had me at Centenary. He took me with him to Southeastern Louisiana. He took me back at Murray State. He helped me get the job at Murray State. And probably one of the coolest moments between me and him, and I know I'm getting off the track of Centenary a little bit, but is my first year here at Iowa State. We played them at Texas A&M in the SEC Big 12 Challenge. And I had just had my firstborn. And they beat us, and they were really good. We went to the Sweet 16 that year. They went to the Sweet 16 as well. But, you know, they asked a question about the job, and you know, if he was proud of me, a different thing. But he just started talking about seeing me grow as a man and as a father, and that was a pretty cool interview to watch, you know, for me. And it really makes you understand what's important in this game. But so Centenary, we're a long way from Centenary now, and that's the one thing you keep preaching, like to my managers that want to get into coaching, is you're going to have to take some risks. You're going to have to take some jobs that are tough financially. And fortunately, you know, I had a really good support system that can kind of help me through that beginning stages, where a good friend of mine, Roy Rogers, that played at Alabama, he was in the NBA at that time. He helped me, you know, with some things, and obviously had great parents. And so, you know, it worked out.
Well, you went on with Billy to Southeastern Louisiana, and you were there 5 years. And then for some reason or another, you guys got separated for a year. You went to Tulane. I'm not sure what he did that 1 year. Maybe he stayed at Southeastern. And the next thing you know, you're back together again. You're at Murray State, which is, you know, has always had a really, really good reputation as a basketball school up in kind of the mountains of Kentucky. And you're together again, and you're making a salary, and you feel like a full-fledged head coach. But tell us about the experience at you were there for like 5 years as an assistant, and then you took over as the head coach in 2011 and stayed there through 2015, if I've got my facts exactly.
Yep.
Exactly right. So what was it like being an assistant at Murray State, a basketball school? I mean, they have good football there, but it's a basketball school. The arena there is a rocking arena. I've seen some games there. And then you became the head coach. What was that like, that transition?
Yeah, it was great. You know, what happened, and just to touch on, I know you're that time at Southeastern, our last couple of years at Southeastern, you know, we won back-to-back conference championships. And our last year, we went to the NCAA tournament, and it was kind of at that time where, you know, coach couldn't, you know, there was some jobs that, hey, you know, Tulane, he didn't get. And it was kind of the fad right then, and it was, man, we're going to hire high major assistants, you know, instead of maybe promoting a low major head coach to a job. And so coach went to the University of Miami for 1 year, worked with Frank Hayes, and I went to Tulane and worked with Dave Dickerson. It was his first year as head coach at Tulane. It was actually the year of Hurricane Katrina. So that was probably the toughest, most personally and professionally year of my life, just going through Hurricane Katrina. But then we joined back the next year at Murray State. And Murray is just a special place for a lot of reasons for me. I spent up to 10 years there. It's Iowa State to me is like a huge version of Murray State in the standpoint of how they love their school, the great community that they have, the great people that are there, and just the admiration and love they have for their university and the passion they have for their sports teams. And so I met my wife there. I had my first son there. All my wife's family is from there, so we go back there a lot. And it's good to see that they've been able to, you know, my former assistant's been able to continue great, great success there. And we had a great run. You know, we got there, and we replaced Coach Cronin. He did a great job. And I think it was our fourth year that, you know, there as an assistant, we beat Vanderbilt in the NCAA tournament. And then that year we played Butler to go to the Sweet 16 in 2010. And we lost. We were up 4, but going in the last media timeout, and we end up getting beat by 2. And Butler goes on to play for the national championship. And so a year later, we won the conference again. We got upset in the conference tournament. We went to the NIT, and then Texas A&M opened for coach, and he took that job. And then over the next couple weeks, I was kind of up in the air. Was I going to go to A&M, or was I going to get the Murray State job? And was fortunate, you know, coach did a great job of really helping me get that job. And, you know, we had a couple good players coming back, and, you know, I got that job in 2011-12 was the first year, and it was really a surreal. Our first year there was really surreal. We won our first 23 games in to start the year. We were the last unbeaten team in the country. We got rated as high as number 7 in the country Dick Vitale came and did one of our games against St. Mary's for the Bracket Buster back when ESPN had the Bracket Buster. And we ended up going on the NCAA tournament and finished 31-2 and, you know, won the third game ever in tournament history for Murray State and NCAA. So spent three more years there after there. And in 2015, you know, we had another really good run. You know, we won 25 games in a row. You know, it was one of the longest streaks in college basketball. We ended up getting upset by Belmont in the championship game, and that cost us an NCAA tournament bid, which still kind of haunts you. But we were able to go to the NIT kind of quarterfinals that year, and then from there, I obviously got this Iowa State job. But coached a lot of really good players when I was there. Isaiah Cannon, who played in the NBA 6 years right now. Cameron Payne, who's been in the NBA 4 years, and you know, several other guys that really impacted me in that program.
Well, Steve, you know, the Murray State, I want to just stay with that just a minute. You know, people look at that as a mid-major program. I don't. I think it's a major basketball program that plays in maybe a mid-major league. I mean, it's different. It's not a Power Five league like Iowa State is in. So you've got to have the same players, same type players that you need at Iowa State, but the recruiting has got to be different. I mean, you've got to identify the same type player that Iowa State needs or somebody like that needs, but you've got to be a little better, maybe evaluator, somebody that can come in there. This is the player we need. We got to get them before Iowa State gets them. Are you following what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the biggest thing. I think you really got to have great eyes. You got to be ahead of the game a little bit. And I used to never like to announce who we were recruiting or put scholarship offers out there on the table there, because once you did that and they see, hey, Murray State's recruiting Dave Odom out of Winston-Salem, North Carolina, now all of a sudden Alabama's going to call in there. Auburn's going to call in there. Vanderbilt's going to call in there. Ole Miss is going to call in there. And so I never really liked to kind of, you know, give a bunch of offers out there. You know, we just try to recruit kids hard and try to keep everything close to the vest. So, you know, you can get guys like Isaiah Cannon or Cameron Payne. You know, the thing, you know, the last four point guards at Murray State after this year will be in the NBA. You know, or the G League. You know, Cannon's in the NBA, Payne's in the NBA. Jonathan Stark is in the G League, actually right up the road in Des Moines with the Wolves, with the Iowa Wolves. And then Ja Morant's going to be a lottery pick this year. And so, like you said, if you're going to win high at that level, like they expect you to win there, you got to have a couple high major players.
Okay, so we got the Iowa State job, and you move yourself and your family out to Ames, Iowa. I've been to Hilton Coliseum. They can talk about the majesty of being in the Fog Allen Fieldhouse. I don't know that it's any more raucous than the Hilton Coliseum. Tell me about Iowa State. Tell me about the Hilton Coliseum. Tell me about the Big 12 and how things are going out there. And talk about this year's team a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I guess it was the spring is, you know, it's kind of spring season's ended and, you know, things start settling down as you go into June, you get ready for camp and summer school. And, you know, it's our anniversary, June 1st. And so my wife and I are riding up to Paducah, Kentucky. And all of a sudden I hear that Fred Hoiberg takes the Bulls job. And so we're driving and I said, you know what, to my wife, Katie, I said, you know, there's only a couple jobs that I would really leave here for. I said, but I think that's one job if they've got interest that I'd be really interested in, because, you know, when I watch them on TV, it's such an amazing fan base and it's such a special, special community. And she, a week later, you know, I'm involved with the job, and maybe probably 2 weeks, maybe probably a couple of days later, I'm involved with the job. And a week later, I have the job. I think what you said's right. If you pulled everybody in our league, what's the best environment in our league, I think you'd say Kansas and Iowa State. State kind of 1A, 1B. If you watched us play this weekend, I mean, our arena, it shows well, so well on TV. You know, if you see our fan base at our at the Alamo Bowl this couple weeks ago with our football team playing Washington State and San Antonio, just the fan base that's down there. Hilton Magic is just, it's a, and you hear Fran Fraccilla talk about it all the time, it's a top five venue. It's a bucket list. Like, we need to go watch Kansas at Iowa State. We need to go watch, you know, Oklahoma at Iowa State. We need to see Texas at Iowa State, or, you know, because that's Iowa at Iowa State. You know, my first game here, you know, Kentucky fans are a little different than Iowa fans. These fans here, they kind of will you to win. And my first year here, we're down 20 to Iowa. We're 8-0, we're fourth in the country, and we're getting beat by a rival by 20. And we cut the lead to 18, and the roof comes off. I mean, you can't hear anything. We end up coming back, and Monte Morris is with the Denver Nuggets now, hits a little floater. We win by one, and literally they storm the floor because it's Iowa, and it's a big win. But literally the arena's shaking, and you can't hear it. They got a great tradition here. They play Sweet Caroline, you know, after big wins by Neil Diamond. And it's really a surreal place, the way they support. But they support everything here. They support – you know, they're going to get 60,000 every weekend for football. Women's basketball is going to get 9,000 or 10,000. Women's volleyball is going to get 5,000. When wrestling, when our wrestling coach gets our wrestling program back to where it's been in the past, they're going to sell out Hilton as well with 14,000 people. We've just got we've got one of the top 5 or 10 fan bases in the country, and our AD's done an amazing job of really continuing to build our brand, and so. You know, you kind of fast forward now to the Big 12, and you look at all the, you know, you sit in these meetings, and me kind of mentioned I'm one of the younger coaches in the league, if not one of the youngest. And you look around, you see Bill Self and Lon Kruger and Bob Huggins and Jamie Dixon. And, I don't want to leave anyone out because the league is tremendous from top to bottom. But half of our league have been to the Final Four. You know, half the league is going to be in the Hall of Fame one day. But when you sit in conference meetings and they say, this is the best league I've ever coached in, you know, this is the toughest league I've ever coached in, and referees say this is the toughest league to ref because of the pace of play and how good these guys are, then you sit back as a young coach and say, man, this really is the best league in the country. And statistically and rating-wise, we've been the number one league in the country, I think, 5 of the last 6 years. And so, you know, it's about having really, really good players first and foremost, and then obviously great coaches and great venues. But Iowa State, you know, to go back to that, this is a special place. And the biggest thing for here, what kind of drives you, is you just don't want to let people down because they have such an admiration and passion for their school and for these kids. And, you know, what we've been able to do here with the program, and I think all the great programs do this, we've started a reunion. And, you know, the last 2 years we started it, and so this summer will be year three for us. And, you know, last year we honored Tim Floyd, and, you know, my hopes is this year, this summer, is to honor Larry Eustace and one of his championship teams. But, you know, we have over 125 former players back on campus every summer now.
Wow.
And so, you know, Jamal Tinsley, Jeff Hornacek, Marcus Fizer, you know, all my current guys that are in the NBA, Niang, Burton Morris, Naz Long. I mean, the list goes on. And so this is a unique place. And these former players got a lot of pride in Iowa State. And so I think that's what drives you, is not letting anybody down.
Well, you know, I'm not going to let you out of here unless we talk about Maui. For those that don't know, well, I invited Iowa State when Fred Hoiberg was there to come over and be part of the Maui Jim Maui tournament in 2018. And, of course, Fred left, and Steve Prohm came and took over, and he has taken the program to another level, and came over this year. He was kind of without one or two of his starters. I think it was two starters. He still won a game over there, and I remember Steve and I had a conversation before he left. I said, you've got a really, really good team. Go home, get your people well, get them all back, and you're gonna have a great year. And you have springboarded into what looks like it's going to be a great year. Tell me about that Maui experience. Tell me about your team, and then we'll get you out of here and let you get back to coaching.
You know, Maui, you know, it's for me, it's first and foremost as a head coach and a fan of the game. You know, it was an unbelievable experience to be a part of that. The venue out there, the way the fans travel, you know, aren't our fans traveled out there, but just the environment out there in that gym, you know, you could be playing anybody, and it's just the stakes are higher. You know, it's just it's hot. You know, there's a lot of emotion. There's tremendous energy. You got all the NBA people out there because you got all these great teams from Duke to Arizona to San Diego State to Gonzaga and all down the line. And, you know, credit Fred for the amazing job he did here to get Iowa State in consideration to being a part of the best preseason tournament that you can be a part of, you know, in college basketball. And so that was my big selling point to our guys was, hey, guys, now, these guys in the past got us in there. You know, Fred got me to be in there. These former players got you in there. Now, let's not go let them down. And, you know, we lost Arizona, but we came back. We beat Illinois. We beat San Diego State. Got out of there 2-1. And, you know, thought leaving there that we have a chance to be a really good team. But just the overall experience, the way people treat you out there, you know, like I said, the games, the environment, there's nothing better. And early in the year, that's where you want to be playing to showcase your team, showcase your talents. And so, you know, we got back from there and we've slowly kind of brought guys back from suspension and injury. And so we've made a lot of strides, you know, from the beginning of the year till now. But now it's Big 12 play. So it's really one game at a time. You got to have, you know, you lose one, you win one, you got to flip the page and get ready for the next game. But I really like this team that we're coaching right now. I've told them the whole time, we're the only ones that can get in our way. I like our talent level. I like the ability to play four guards and space people out. And then, you know, if we can grow on the defensive end and we can keep the outside noise away from this group and keep them selfless and unselfish, then I think we have a chance to make a really good run in our league this year.
Steve Prohm, I want to thank you for your time. It's been an interesting time traveling with you through all the way from Vienna, Virginia, all the way to Iowa State, Ames, and the best part of your story lies ahead. I also want to thank all our fans and our listeners for tuning in to the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast. I know you've enjoyed listening to Coach Prohm, and you'll be interested in following his Cyclones the rest of the year. So, on behalf of the NABC, we want to thank everybody, including Steve Prohm, for their time today. I hope they've enjoyed it. I know I have enjoyed being with you. So good luck to you and your team the rest of the season. And for the listeners, to learn more about the NABC, visit nabc.com.